Phil Hack. I'm a program manager at Microsoft with the ASP.NET team, and I work on the ASP.NET MVC framework. And today, the title of my talk is America's Next Top Model View Controller. Please, no rioting today. We don't want to have a repeat of what just happened if you hadn't seen the news recently about rioting at the auditions. So, all right. So, right now, I want to start off with the objectives and takeaways for this talk. Excuse me, sorry. So first of all, I want to introduce you to this crazy new MVC thing that we've been working on. We just released a couple days ago, so version 1.0 RTM or RTW, whatever you want to call it. I want to then convince you that it's not as crazy as it seems, and ideally not bore you to sleep in presenting all this information. And what I hope you take away from that is that MVC puts you in full control over your application, over your markup. Hopefully you'll take some excitement away about it perhaps lack of sleep if I didn't bore you. And I also have a follow-up session tomorrow at 9 a.m. I know it's early, but tomorrow is a little bit more advanced, and I dig deeper into a lot of cool tips for building MVC applications. So this talk, just to set your expectations, this talk is an introductory talk about ASP.NET MVC. So, if you're already a guru or wizard, you might not find a whole lot new here, except that I will show some of the new tooling features if you haven't seen them yet that we just released. So first of all, there's an urban myth that I need to clarify. There's a story going around that Scott Gu wrote the first prototype of ASP.NET MVC while flying in a plane, and I need to correct this for the record. He did it while flying a plane. Anyways. All right, so what is ASP.NET MVC? This is a new web application project type. So if you're familiar with the difference between websites and web applications, we don't have a template for websites using MVC. We have a web application. That means your application is compiled into an assembly that lives in your bin directory. And this is simply an option. It's a one alternative approach to building your presentation layer than using web forms. It's a feature of ASP.NET. So we have this core ASP.NET, and on top of it, for the presentation side, we have web forms, and we have now have MVC. And one analogy, it's not a perfect analogy, but one analogy we like to use is manual versus automatic transmission. And I don't mean by the numbers of people we expect will use one or the other, but more along the lines of some people really like to drive manual, they just feel like that's the way to do it, and other people really like to drive automatic. And it's not like one is necessarily better than the other in all occasions. There are certain scenarios where one might be better than the other. Like, for example, you have a little more control of your driving experience when you drive manual. So let's start off with, we'll start right off with my file new demo. And this demo is appropriately named because I start with the file menu and we create a new project. And let's zoom into here. So what you see here in the list of install templates, after you install ASP.NET MVC, you can get the MSI from I'll have a URL for that. After you install it, it installs a new project template. And if you're wondering why it takes so long to run the MSI, it's that step of the installer trying to install that project template. And you can select this template. Whoops. Oh. So I'm still getting used to this Zoom feature. Let's try that again. New project. Select this template. And one of the first things that happens is you get this dialog. Would you like to create a unit test project for this application? So the nice thing about this is that we have this drop-down list of test frameworks. And you can see here that I have MBUnit, Visual Studio Unit Test, and XUnit.net. Now, by default, there's only Visual Studio Test in there. However, it's really easy for you to get a third-party unit test framework to show up in that drop-down. And what we do then is we hook up the unit test project to reference your project and set all that up for you, which saves you a couple clicks and steps. And one other thing you could do is if you go to the web developer blog that has instructions on how to get a test framework in there, one approach you could take is to create your own custom project that has whatever libraries you like to use, like a mock framework or some custom test code that you use all the time. And get that in there so that you have it all set up the way you like it. All right. So I click OK. and Visual Studio chug along. Uh-oh. I hate when I do that. So one of the things about the magnifier is if you're not careful and you hit the wrong combination, it suddenly switches it to a different view that I don't want. Okay, there we go. So let's look at the Solution Explorer. So if you were in Hansman's talk just previous to mine, he went through some of this introductory stuff as well. I'll dig into it a little bit more than he did. MVC is a framework that's really heavy on conventions. We don't try to take it too far, but we really want a set of conventions that we think make sense so that things work the way you would expect them to work. And we also really want to emphasize guidance. So we'll have, by default, these directories that show you where to place certain files. So you don't have to follow the convention. You can always deviate from the conventions if you want. But if you follow the convention, certain things become easier to do with this framework. So for example, we have a content directory here set up, and you might put your images and CSS files in there. We have a controllers directory, and you'll notice here that we have an account controller and a home controller by default. The models folder is blank because we don't know what application you're going to build. But what we wanted to do there is put it there to indicate to you that this is a place that, for example, you could put presentation or application-specific models, or you can put your real domain models in there, and then later, when you actually need to reuse them in another project, you might pull them out and put them into a separate project. The scripts directory here contains, you'll see that we can have jQuery. That weird one with the VS doc here, that's a Visual Studio IntelliSense file. So if you get the hotfix that's on the web developer tool blog, that may, just having that file there will ensure that you get jQuery IntelliSense, which is really cool. And so we're the first project to ship jQuery as in band within our product, which is a third-party open source JavaScript framework. So that's something that we've been very excited about. We also ship the include in the scripts directory the Microsoft Ajax libraries and a MVC-specific library. So one of the things with MVC is it's a little more manual. We don't have the script manager if you're used to WebForms. So when you want to use these libraries, you need to drag them into your, you need to reference them in your files. And then we have the views directory here. So you can see that we have a views directory for each controller. So there's an account controller, and we have an account views. And we have a home views, and we have a home controller. And not only that, if I dig in further, you can see that the index action, we have action methods. And so we have the index action method and about action method, and I'll talk about those in a second. But we have the views correspond to those action methods. So here we have an index and about action method as well. So I'll start at the beginning here by showing you the routing stuff in globalasax.cs. So every request in every request in ASP.NET starts off being handled by the routing infrastructure or the routing feature. Now routing is something that was actually shipped with ASP.NET 3.5 SP1. So a lot of times you hear someone say, oh, routing is part of MVC. It's actually not the case. Routing is built on, MVC is built on routing and makes use of routing. And it makes use of it in a very interesting way in that it will route URLs into method calls on a class. And those methods, we use the term actions. And the class, we use the term controller. And so the way we have a default route here that we just configure that handles a lot of cases. But it's very easy to go in and add a bunch of different kinds of routes so that you have control over the shape of your URLs and how your URLs map to these action methods. So in this case, you can see that this we specify this URL pattern. Well, I am having real trouble today here. All right. So we have the controller parameter, the action parameter, and the ID parameter. And the way this works is that the curly brackets denotes that this is a parameter. So when a URL matches this pattern, we'll take the first URL segment, and that will be associated in a dictionary with the key controller. The second parameter will be associated with the key action, and the third parameter will be associated with the key ID. We also specify defaults here. So you'll notice that the default value for controller is home. So if you didn't specify a controller, we'll use the value home. With action, we'll use the value index. And with ID, we'll just use the value blank string. So let's see all this in action. So hit Control F5. And the way I'm going to show this off is I'm going to actually add a new method to home controller. Now, one thing to notice here is that these other action methods all return an action result. An action result is is your way of telling the framework to do something on your behalf. So, for example, with these action methods, they put some data in this view data dictionary, which is kind of this default dictionary where you can just throw data in, or you can use your actual model objects. And then we call this method view. We return this view. And so the way to read this is that this action method returns this view result, which then the framework will call on your behalf to actually render the view. And I'll show you why in tomorrow's talk, why that's really great for unit testing. In this case, though, you'll notice that I'm not even returning an action result. I'm just returning a string. So we actually have a concept of implicit action results where sometimes you just want a method to return a string, and that's it, because maybe you're calling from JavaScript or you're doing something different. So we will convert that to a content result, and you can, in a second here, you'll see me call this. So instead of breakpoint, there we go. And then, so notice here that I'm typing in home, and that's the first part of that URL, so that's going to map to controller. I'm going to call demo, which is my action method, and I'm going to just pass in some, garbage here. And you can see here that that URL is directly being mapped to this method here. If I go into the immediates window here, I'll just show you some, let's go into the watch window. Let's look at this real quick. So what the routing does is, as I mentioned before, it parses the URL into a dictionary, and here you can see that dictionary. So for example, for the value controller, we have home, for the value action, we have demo, and for the value ID, we have this garbage that I typed in. And then what the framework does with that data, with MVC, the way MVC layers on top of routing is it looks at these values and it says, okay, by convention, I'm going to take the controller name, attach the suffix controller, and let's look for a type that has that name and implements or inherits from controller. So in this case, we're going to look for a home controller class. Well, we have one, as I mentioned before. Oh, darn it. All right, I am not using this magnifier anymore. All right, let's see if I can pull this out. All right, great. So as I mentioned before, we have home controller here, which implements controller. And then we have this action method demo and an ID. So when I let this play out fully, we get this simple little hello from mix, blah, blah, blah. All right, so let's review what we just covered. So what is MVC? So MVC, which stands for Model View Controller, is a design pattern, more specifically a presentation pattern. And one of the key things it embodies is this principle of separation of concerns. So MVC is a very old pattern. It's not something we invented, but application to the web is also something we didn't invent either, but it's something new to the ASP.NET team. And so a request comes in, and as I mentioned before, routing will figure out which controller to call, and that request will come into the controller. The controller manipulates the model, the presentation model, passes that to the view, and then the view transforms that into the appropriate output, typically HTML, and sends that to the response. So it's a pretty straightforward line of execution. You're not dealing with events and handling multiple events and page load and all that stuff. So what were our goals with this framework? Why did we create this framework? One of the things we wanted to really ensure is that there was frictionless testability. So you can write unit tests against web forms. There's a web client software factory, or WCSF, which is, it provides a model view presenter pattern for doing TDD against web forms. So you can take something like that and actually write unit tests against it. But with MVC, we really put testability at the forefront of our design process. And so doing TDD with MVC is a little more streamlined, a little more frictionless. We wanted to make sure that you had tight control over markup. More and more web forms is also providing more very good control over markup, but sometimes, certain cases, it takes a little more work in web forms to get that control. With MVC, you're in control of every angle bracket, which means you have a lot more responsibility, too. The other thing is user/SEO-friendly URLs. So SEO stands for search engine optimization, and we want those nice, clean, hackable URLs. When I talk about that, I usually use something like Flickr as an example. When I'm looking at pictures of puppies, you go into the address bar and you'll see /puppies at the end, and I can just change that to /kittens, and now I'm looking at kittens, and which I do all the time. And that's using the URL as a secondary user interface to the application. So some people will click around and always use the buttons, but sometimes if you have these nice hackable URLs, people will actually use the address bar, not just techies. Another goal is we want to leverage the benefits of ASP.NET. So ASP.NET, the core of ASP.NET, provides a lot of functionality. So membership, profile, all these things. And we want to make sure that we leverage that as much as possible so that we didn't have to write all this stuff from the ground up from scratch. And then we also want to make sure that we had a lot of conventions and guidance. We wanted to make sure that when you started a new app, you didn't just get this blank slate and sit there thinking, well, what do I do now? So take a moment to read that. This is one of those. So the image there is something we were trying to avoid with this framework, right? You don't want all these responsibilities bundled up into a single class. And then it becomes really hard to change that class because it's doing too much, and you don't know how all these things interrelate with each other. So one of the key benefits of MVC is that we really try to help you help enforce separation of concerns. And what that means is that each component has one responsibility. A lot of times it's mentioned as one reason to change. Another aspect of that is this concept of dry, or don't repeat yourself. So we want to really try to avoid repeating code, because that's usually a bad thing, because somewhere down the road you'll change it in one place and forget to change it in the other. We also want to make sure that separation of concerns also makes things easily testable. If you're dealing with a class and it only has one responsibility, you don't have to worry about all the other things it's trying to do when you're writing a unit test against that class. And it helps with concurrent development. If I can work on my model object and give the designer some information, and they go off and start doing the design, then we can do these things in tandem pretty easily. And we have more TLAs. So I don't know if you've noticed, but we had a counter on the top right of how many TLAs I've mentioned up until now. So MVC ships with lots more three-letter acronyms, in case you didn't know what that was. All right, let's talk about clean URL. So I mentioned a little bit about this earlier. MVC, using routing, MVC makes it very easy to produce clean REST-like URLs. So for example, /product/update is one way of doing it, or /blog/post/the date. And these URLs are friendlier to humans. So I show here like a common example is /product.aspx :category ID=123. When I read that, I don't know what's on that blog page, right? I just know that it's something to do with category 123. But with routing, you can make that become /product/kittens. And that is not only friendlier to humans, but if it's friendlier for humans, it's also friendlier for search bots. Now they know that that page is about kittens, and they give the URL a lot of value in terms of determining what the content of the page is. Another key goal of MVC is being very extensible. You can replace any component of the system with something of your own device or with some third-party component. We use a heavy interface and abstract-based class in architecture. We have very few sealed methods and classes, and we really focus hard on playing well with others. So you notice that our models folder that I showed you earlier was blank, so we don't tell you what data access layer to use. Use whatever you want, right? If you want to use link to SQL, link to entities, and Hibernate, Subsonic, feel free. Also, we provide hook points. If you're into using inversion of control containers and dependency injection containers, you can hook in Castle, Windsor, Structure Map, or Ninject. You can also use third-party view engines such as Enamel and Spark and a variety of others. So we really made it, really wanted to play well with others. A lot like with the unit testing framework. We want to make sure that if anyone has a unit test framework, they can get it into our test dialogue. And the last thing is this term webby. MVC is designed to be kind of respect the way the web works. For example, there's this pattern that's out there called PRG, otherwise known as post, redirect, get. And what it's trying to do is avoid this dialogue here. So this dialogue, are you all familiar with this dialogue? You guys ever run into this? Now most of you here probably immediately, you don't even need to read this. You know what it means and you know what's going on. But you show that dialogue to a normal end user who is trying to hit the back button and gets this dialogue, or trying to hit refresh and gets this dialogue. They don't really understand why are you prompting them with this information, like what's going on here. It's very confusing and it's not very usable. So the PRG pattern tries to get around this, and what it says is anytime you do a form post, an HTTP post, you should not render content in response to that post. Instead, you should do a redirect, which then issues a get. And what the benefit of that is that you typically a post changes something. You post in response to add a new record or edit a record. So when someone hits refresh, it tries to resubmit that post and tries to remake that change. That's not a good thing. That's where this dialogue comes in. And so we want to, MVC makes it really easy to follow the PRG pattern. Now there's also, in my examples, you'll see I follow what I call, there's sort of the strict PRG, and then there's kind of the loose PRG, which is the one I like to use, which is I will render in response to a post if, for example, the form post failed validation and nothing was changed. Because in that case, it just makes it really easy to do it, but there are those who feel that's even the wrong way to go about it. But I just want to mention that because that is an option. All right, so for my next demo, I'm going to show off this application I've been building called Hack Overflow. And if you saw the keynote, Jeff Atwood and Joel Spolsky demoed Stack Overflow. So they are my primary competition. And real quick, let's take a look at Stack Overflow. I know you may have seen it in the keynote, but I just want to talk about a couple things that I like about this site. Let me log out first. So first of all, you can see there's these nice clean URLs, right? Let's go to C# tag here. And I'll talk about what I mentioned earlier. Okay, I said I wouldn't use this anymore, but I really want to. All right, so these are all the questions. So to give background, Stack Overflow is a question and answer site. You ask a question, people can submit their answers, and then answers get voted up and marked as by the person who asked the question as, yeah, this is the one I accept as the answer. And when that happens, the answer gets moved up right under the question. So when you're actually looking for answers, it's really nice because you'll see the question, you'll see the most relevant answer right underneath. And then all the other answers are sorted by votes. And so in this particular case, if I wanted to see all questions tagged with XML, I can just use the URI. And a lot of times I'll do this when I want to go and try out different things. The other thing about this site is that when I view source, you'll see that the markup is very clean. They're using clean semantic markup. For the most part, they avoid using tables for layout and so on. And you're not seeing anything in here such as a really long Base64 encoded view state, because MVC doesn't make use of view state. We don't use server controls. So this is kind of a paradigm shift if you're using if you're used to using web forms. And the other thing I really like about this site is the support for open standards. So for example, I can log in using OpenID. And there's this question on here, and I think they showed this in the keynote, but I just want to show it again. Is stackoverflow.com written in Ruby on Rails? And this was asked by Obi Fernandez, who's a well-known Rails developer. And the reason he asked this is that Ruby on Rails has come to embody this set of aesthetic principles of how websites should be designed with these clean URLs, with the clean semantic markup. And it's something that, in this case, I'm really happy to say that, well, no, this particular site was built with MVC. MVC is a great way of building these type of websites. So let's look at how I might build this site and give Jeff a run for his money. So I'm just going to continue on from where I left off with the file new demo. We'll just delete that method. Oh, I have to stop debugging. And the first step is I need data. I need a database. So I prepared one ahead of time because I didn't want to bore you with my database design skills. Let me just drag this into the app data folder. And from here, I'll just, in the models directory, I'm going to add new item. Now, one thing I just want to recommend here is you get this huge list of item templates, but if you just click on data, for example, it'll filter it down a little bit, so it makes it easier to make sense of what you're trying to look at. And for this demo, I'm going to choose to use link to entities or the entity framework. Oops. And so I don't know if you saw that. I might have moved quickly, but I'm generating everything from the database. I just generate all the tables, hit finish. Now, Entity Framework is chugging along, and it's going to build up this model and all these objects based on the database schema that I gave it. And you can see that here. Okay. Did you see that disappear? Windows 7 bug. All right. I can't seem to make that window go away. So here you can see that all my tables are now represented by model objects. So let's compile. So let's think about the next step. The first step I want to do is I want to just generate a view that shows all the questions in my database. So we'll start off with the simple approach of doing that, and then we'll make it look better later. So in Home Controller, I can go in here. I'm going to reference Hack Overflow entities. In case if you didn't see what I did there, when it gave me that little underline thing, I hit Control Dot, which will add the appropriate using statement for me. You might think I'm a narcissist for calling this Hack Overflow, but I'm really not. Just, Well, okay, no, I am. So from these entities, let's get all the questions out of here, right? So a little tip here, you see how that says question? It's kind of weird because that property is actually, if you zoom in here, that question, let's see, is actually an object query question, or it's a way I can get all the questions from the database. So one of the things with the entity framework that you have to be aware of is that right now, although this will be fixed in the future, right now it doesn't do pluralization and singularization automatically. But it's pretty easy. I can just go in here and select the model object. Let me select this. Hit Alt Enter to get to the properties. I know what I need to do. Sorry, I had a little trouble with the windowing here. Okay, so in this case, we have a question. And I can give it the entity set name of questions. That way, when I get the property, it'll be pluralized. So from what I've heard, the next version of entity framework should fix that and have automatic pluralization and singularization. So now this code will be a lot less confusing. Delete this. So I need to go in and delete the old index.asps because I'm going to replace it with this one. Now at this point, I've written the controller action, but I need to generate a view. And one of the new things that we have with the tooling for ASP.MVC is the ability to the add view dialog, which uses T4 templates. So in here, if I hit Control-M, Control-V, that's a keyboard shortcut for adding a view. The way I remember is it's kind of like make view, right? Control M, Control V. And I can create a strongly typed view. When I select this dialog, you can see here that I have all my model objects in there. So in this case, I'll select question. And for the view content, I'll select list. And then when we click add, it's going to run a T4 template, which is a code generation template. And this has been a feature of Visual Studio that no one's known about since Visual Studio 2005. And so we've taken advantage of this feature by having the add view dialog read these T4 templates and actually generate these views, the view code for you. And you can go in and modify and edit those T4 templates to customize them any way you see fit. So in this case, we've generated a table of all the questions. So let's take a look at what that site looks like. Great. So in very little time, I've produced a nice table, and we have these edit and detail links for each of these items. So let's implement details. So right now when I click on it, you'll notice here that I haven't yet implemented that action method. One other thing I want to show you here is that the T4 template, when you're using Entity Framework, is actually able to read off the metadata from the model and hook up the primary key in those links. Now, if you're using link to SQL or just some plain old object, we wouldn't know which property is intended to be your primary key. So what we would do here is we'd actually generate a comment that says ID equals item dot primary key something or other. And what you would go do is then edit that to have the actual primary key or whatever property you need to generate the URL. So just something I wanted to point out. So going back to home controller, so now I have this table, and I want to see a detailed view of one of those questions. And it's going to pass me the ID of it. And you notice here that I have an int ID. So if you have an action method that takes in an int of ID, we'll try to coerce the value in the route values into an int. But if you did string ID, then you would get the original string instead. So we'll do some cut and paste coding here. And again, I wouldn't recommend writing a real app this way. I mean, you shouldn't be creating this entities object, for example, in each action method. I'm just doing this for the sake of demo. And let's do this first. So another EF point here is that if you just want to grab a single object, I believe the single method actually doesn't work with EF. You have to use the first method. So if you see, for example, Enhancement's demo, he's using link to SQL, he'll call the single or default. In my case, I'm just going to call the first method. And now I need to pass an expression saying, well, what questions do I want? And I want the ones where the ID is equal to the ID passed in. And let's correct the casing here. Great, so now I have this action method that's, when a request is made to look at the details for this question, we'll grab the question from the database, and now I just need to create the view for this. So again, Control-M, Control-V brings up this dialog. In this case, I'm going to pick a different template. I'm going to pick the details template. So we provide the templates for doing the basic CRUD operations in the box, but you can imagine if you have a very custom way of doing things, you can have all sorts of cool T4 templates. So let's take a quick look at what that produced now. So now when I hit details, and if I remember to compile, we'll see this work. Okay, great. So now I have the details view, which shows details for the item. So next step is let's implement edit while we're in here. And in this case, edit is actually very similar to details. So I'm going to copy that. Whoops. Edit. Add. And let's refresh. All right, so far we're doing these really, really simple views. We haven't actually changed any, we haven't built anything that allows us to change the data. So in this case, you know, again, action methods are responsible for handling user input. In this case, we have an edit action that's saying, show me the edit form. But what happens, what do I do to submit this form? By default, if we look into the code that we generated here, we're using this funky HTML begin form method. And what this does is we're actually using it in a using block. And the way this works is that at the very end of the using block here, we have the end angle bracket that ends the using block. What happens with C# when you do a using block is at the end of the using block, it calls a dispose method. And using it is often used to dispose resources that you're holding on to. But it actually, the original intention of it was for a way of defining a scope. And so in this case, we have a begin form, and then at the very end of the form, we want to make sure we render out the end form tag. So this is one way you can do that. Another way is you could just write the form tag yourself. One of the benefits of using the helpers, of course, is that if you have attributes, we'll encode them and stuff like that. In this case, the parameterless begin form is going to post back to the same URL. So as I mentioned earlier about the PRG pattern, we would want to redirect after the postback. But one nice thing here is that, so it's going to post back to the same URL, which is going to look for an action named edit. But we don't want to have to put in, like, if, the request was posted back into this edit method here. So there's a way for us to differentiate which method gets called by using an attribute here. And we can differentiate based on what the HTTP method or verb is in use. So the first edit method I wrote is for rendering out the edit form. And this next one is going to be the method that gets called when we post the form back. So we use this accept verbs attribute here. So what's going on here is that accept verbs attribute, we gave it a value of httpverbs.post, and that's saying if a http post is asking for the edit action, use this one. Otherwise, use whatever, use a different one. And so in this case, since we only have two, it's very easy to differentiate between the get and post. Now, when this happens, what we need to do is There's a lot of ways we could implement this method. I'm just going to pick one. I'm going to grab the question from the database again. And in tomorrow's talk, I'll show you a different way where I don't have to do this extra database call. And I'm just going to set its values from the values that got posted in. You'll notice here that we have that I'm actually passing in a question to this method. And that seems kind of weird because this is a method that's getting a form post. We have this concept of, we have this way of getting form values that map to the property names of an object to actually automatically populate the values of that object when it's an argument of an action method. So it's, simply put, it's a neat way of getting form values that have the same value, shape as an object into an action method as an argument. So in this case, I can go in here, for example, and say dbQuestion.title equals question.title. So, you know, keep in mind that that question here represents your form post values. So instead of doing request.form, you know, square brace quotes, title, I can just, you know, reference it from the question title. dbQuestion. Let's see, what's something else I want to, oh, body. Equals question.body. And there's a lot of other properties, but we'll just start with those. And then, so I'm editing. Okay, so let's do entities.saveChanges. Now, again, as I mentioned before, I want to redirect back to the index page afterwards. Now, one thing I haven't done is I haven't dealt with any validation errors. So what I'll do here is use the model state. And the model state is this collection that contains the value of everything being submitted in and any errors associated with them. So for example, if question had an integer property and the user typed ABC, then we cannot coerce ABC into an integer. So we'll add a value in the model state saying that property is not valid. And so we can check that by using the isValid property. And if it's not valid, following the what I call the loose PRG, we'll just return the original edit view. Okay. So with that in play, let's change this question. I think the title should be, is Hack Overflow better than Stack Overflow? And when I click Save, we can see here that it's we changed the question. So in a very short amount of time, I've created a site here that I can list all the questions, I can show the details, and I can edit all these questions. So the goal of the T4 templates is to really help jumpstart your development and building these things. Now, let's take a look at the competition here. And we can see here that I'm kind of a long ways from Stack Overflow in features and in look and feel. So we need to do something better here. One thing you'll notice here is that when you see a table here, sometimes people have this negative reaction now that, oh, you know, you shouldn't be using tables because you're a semantic web markup CSS person. And the thing I always remind people is that tables are great when you're displaying tabular data, right? That's what they're for. They're not good for when you're using tables specifically for layout. That's what you want to avoid. And what we can see here is that in the front page of Stack Overflow, this is not a table of, this is not tabular data. This is a list of questions with some cool formatting and layout. So the fact that I generated a table is not the right thing. So I'm going to have to change that up a little bit. And what I've done is, so that you don't have to, so you don't have to watch me do a lot of view typing, I've created a unordered list .tt a template in advance. Now this one I've cheated a little bit. It's a little specific to this demo, but I'll give it out and you can actually see how you can change it to produce your own unordered lists. And what I do here is I can just drag this into the T4 templates folder. So I have a shortcut to this. And these are located in Program Files, Visual Studio, Common 7 IDE, Item Templates, C#, Web, MVC. So you'll be quizzed on that later. So I can drag this template in here. And when we go over here, let's delete the index view, because we're going to regenerate that using this template. And when I bring up the Add View dialog, you'll notice that the unordered list shows up there immediately. I didn't have to restart Visual Studio or anything. It just shows up immediately. Okay, great. So I've generated this view that will present all this data, all the questions in an unordered list. Let's take a real brief, quick look at what code is in here. First of all, I'm referencing several scripts. I've got the Microsoft Ajax, the MVC Ajax, jQuery 1.32. I have a third-party, jQuery color plugin to do some nice color animation effects. So I had to go onto do a search for jQuery color and download that. So that's a plugin to jQuery that we do not ship in box. And then I have this fill script that has a function I wrote called Flash. And what this Flash function does is you pass it in a CSS selector here. So with jQuery, everything in jQuery works with CSS selectors. So you can pass in effectively what you would pass in for CSS, and it will give you a collection of the elements that match that CSS. So in this case, I'm telling it to Flash something that has the ID of question, but I want you to go to its immediate child li element and go to the last one of those, and we'll see what happens. So in order for this code to ever work, I'm going to actually have to make sure that I include those other script files in the scripts directory. So I have them up here. We'll add jQuery color and fill script. So we have a recent questions heading here, and then I had this for loop where I iterate through all the items and all the questions, and I generate this list element with a bunch of HTML here. Now, if you scroll down here, we can all see that I've included this ajax.beginForm method. So earlier I showed you html.beginForm. That's great when you want to do a full form post and have the controller redirect or something. But what about the case where you want to add a question and you want to do a partial update? You don't actually want to do a full form submission. So ajax.beginForm will help you do that. What you do is you specify the action that it should call, and then you give it this Ajax options object, which is, the properties are a set of options that you want to supply. So in this case, I'm telling it, after you call this action asynchronously, I want you to update this ID. And in this case, it's question, which is this unordered list here. And I want you to update it with whatever content you get back. So in this case, the content it should get back should be a partial view. It shouldn't be the full page. It should just be what goes into that unordered list. The other thing I can tell it is what kind of insertion to do. Do I want you to replace it, insert before, or insert after? So let's look at those options. So in this case, I want it to insert after. And by after, you might think, well, is it going to insert it after the unordered list? Well, it's smart enough to know that when I'm pointing to an unordered list, it's going to insert it at the very end of the list and not after the list. And then on success, I give it a function to call. In this case, I'm telling it to call this FlashIt function here that I wrote up here. And that's going to do this really cool animation effect. So before I do that, I'm going to have to do a little bit of refactoring of my view. As I mentioned before, what I'd really like to happen is when I make that call, I want to get a new list item element, and only the list item element, not the whole view. So in order to make that happen, I need to take this list element and put it into what I call a partial view, or in other words, a view user control. Now, I have one prepared here. And where we want to put it is in the put in the shared folder. Let's take a look at it. So this view references the question object, and I reformatted a little bit to be a little more semantic, have more semantic markup, have these CSS classes so that I can control the styling better with CSS. And now, when I go back, I need to create the create method. So we have an edit method. I'll use that as a template. Oh, no, wrong one. You know, I used to use this term cut and paste developer as a derogatory term, and now I've become one. So, but it's essential for doing demos. All right, so we have this. Let's get rid of this method. We have this create method. This is the method that's going to get called from the JavaScript form, right? So let's make sure we change this question correctly. So instead of getting a question from the database, I'm just going to say new question. And do the same thing and then save changes. But here, instead of redirecting the action index, what I need to do is figure out, well, if this is an AJAX request, I don't want to redirect. I actually want to give it a partial view. So we have this extension method that we added to HTTP request space. So if you do if request dot, you'll get this method is AJAX request. And if it's an AJAX request, we just want to return that partial view that I just created earlier. I think I called it question partial. And we want to pass it the model that it should display, which is DB question. So now this action method is AJAX aware. So if it's a normal form post, let's say they have JavaScript disabled on some mobile devices, for example, this method will still work. It'll just redirect you to the index. But now, assuming I remembered all the right steps to do, I should be able to add a new question. Oh, you know, one last thing. I'm going to get rid of it. I don't want to have to specify all these fields, so we'll just do title and body. And let me make one minor change. So in this case, instead of sending the whole question, I'm just going to send the two fields, title and body. So when you have form fields with a like name, as you saw, I added a form field with the name title. You can actually, another way to get access to that value in the form submission is just to have a parameter of your action method with the same name. And we'll take all the form values and map them to the methods, the parameters of the action. So in this case, you just do this. All right, great. Oh, what happened to all my questions? So one that's... okay. So one other refactoring I totally forgot to do. So I moved all the list item elements into that partial, but I need to actually call it in order for it to render in the view. So we have a method, html.renderPartial. You give it the name of the partial, and you give it what object to render. And in this case, it'll be the current item. And render, you'll notice here that renderPartial doesn't actually return a string. It actually writes the partial view directly to the response. So that's why you have to call it in a different manner than typical helpers. And that's why I need that semicolon at the end there, in case you're wondering. All right, so now, I have this great-looking error message. Oh, did I not compile? Oh, I know what I did. So this is why it's a bad idea to do cut-and-paste development. When I cut-and-paste that partial. That came from another project. So I need to get the actual question. Oh shoot! What I should have done is add new view and shown off this really cool partial view feature of a question. And now I can just take that. And that's what that should have been. Oops. Okay, great. All right, so we have this list of questions. And now we have, if this all works, let's just do this. We got this cool animation effect, this partial update using Ajax. That's very much like Stack Overflow. I mean, I'm almost there. Stack Overflow makes really good use of Ajax. So just one thing left here is that my site is kind of butt ugly. So we should fix that. One of the great things about having control over the markup is that I've been producing really clean semantic markup this whole time. So one of the things I can do now is very easily have someone else go and do some CSS work and create a couple images for me and drop them into my project. So here I have the site.css and I have an images directory. I'm going to copy this, go in here and paste this into the content directory. And you notice here that I don't have to go and update any views. I don't have to go and do all this other work. I could have a designer completely doing this separately for me, you know, kind of the separation of concerns, and really help me out in creating a nice looking site. So now when we go back here, I'm there now, right? I'm ready to compete. And let's try out that ask thing, because this, and ooh, we get that nice flashy effect. So I remember before I started really dealing with MVC and using jQuery, doing little flashy effects like that was really hard for me to figure out how to do that. And now you can just watch my demo and you'll get all the code for doing that. So great for making these really nice interactive websites. So we actually had a couple of the Stack Overflow developers in the audience, so I know that they're worried about their jobs because Hack Overflow is really coming. It's coming along nicely. I'm almost there. All right. So let's take a step back, and I want to talk a little bit about ASP.MVC in terms of the how we ran the project itself, and get a little meta here. So one of the things about MVC is that this is really, in many ways, an experiment in transparency. So we had heavy community involvement, and we want to continue to have heavy community involvement. So if this is something that you're really interested in, if you plan to use it, then join us on the ASP.NET MVC forums. I try to keep track of Twitter as best I can. I look for blogs that mention it. And we have a Coplex site, too, coplex.com/ASP.NET. And in there, we have a section on MVC. We put all our source code out there, so you can go right now and see all the source code for MVC 1.0. We put all our unit tests out there, so you can. We have something like 90-something percent code coverage, so it's a really cool way to learn about MVC or just even to see like what we were thinking when we implemented certain things. The other idea we were trying out with this is you'll notice that we had this very functional project template. What I didn't show you is that I could go in there and register accounts and create users because we actually tied the membership provider into the template. Now, the thing to keep in mind is that template is not meant to be deployed as is into your production site. I mean, first of all, you can create these users, but you have nothing to secure. The point of that template in terms of the membership provider stuff is to show off how you would call membership APIs from an MVC app. But for example, the registration doesn't have any kind of CAPTCHA in there. We don't want to dump a lot of code in there. So if you were trying to prevent automated registration, you would want to use CAPTCHA if that was necessary for your application. It's not necessary for all applications. So we try to run things in a somewhat agile fashion as much as possible. We would have daily triage meetings and weekly design meetings where we'd go over talking about what are we going to do, what are we not going to do. As I mentioned before, we had 94% code coverage over 1,209 unit tests. And that's just the number of unit tests of MVC core DLL. We also have an MVC futures DLL that we put on CodePlex that you can get that has prototypes of things that we think really have a chance of making into the next version of MVC. And we want to try it out, and we want to give you an example, give you a taste of it. And that project has something like 80% code coverage. So writing unit tests against the code is something that we take seriously and aren't just trying to preach about to others, but we take it very seriously. And if you come to my talk tomorrow, I'll show off a little bit about the MVC futures. I'll have a couple tips that use MVC futures. And the other thing is we ship early and often. So on the road to RTM, we've had something like 10 releases. So we had the December CTP in 2007. We had the previews 2, 2.5, 3, 4, 5. Or 2.5 was actually in April. It was called the April CodePlex release, where it was just on CodePlex. We had a beta, 2 release candidates, and then finally RTM. So it's been a long road, but it's been a lot of fun. And we've had, you know, out of those 10 releases, community feedback has really shaped the framework. If you were to go and able to find the December CTP and looked at that, and tried to play with that and look at what we ship now, it would be a very different beast. And that's been, like I said, heavily driven by community in that I really feel that we've shipped a much, much better product because of your involvement. So if you haven't been involved, please become involved. So the last point I want to talk about is ASP.NET is greater than MVC. And it's also greater than WebForm. So I kind of alluded to this at the beginning of the talk, that ASP.NET is a large core infrastructure. There's all kinds of features there. And that a lot of times people will think, oh, well, is MVC replacing ASP.NET? Well, you know, or is it replacing WebForms? And the answer is no, that there's a huge ecosystem here. There's room for everybody. So there was a talk earlier today, Rachel Appel talked about choosing between MVC and WebForms. So I won't go into too much detail about that. If you didn't get a chance to see hers, this next set of slides summarizes it as much as I can. So when we're talking about ASP.NET, it provides services such as caching, routing, localization, all these services. And that gets provided to both MVC and also gets provided to WebForms. So MVC tends to appeal to the do-it-yourselfers, those who are really concerned about separation of concerns. And again, not that you can't do that with WebForms. You totally can. But it's something that we've designed into it from the very beginning. If you're a TDD person, if you like the extensibility that it provides, then you know MVC is definitely worth investigating. WebForms, the benefits of WebForms is that it has this huge control ecosystem. You can find a control to do just about anything. And sometimes all you need to get a job done is to slap a control on a page and bind it to some data, and it's like, that's good enough for version 1. And maybe version 2, you'll do something different. State management is something that is a tricky one in that WebForms provides a state management that makes the development feel a lot more like a WinForm development than MVC. I remember the first time I wrote a web application was classic ASP, and I kept thinking, well, where did all these request values go? Where did all these, I set this variable and now it's gone when I click this button. What happened? It was very foreign to me. Now, after all these years of doing web development, I tried to build a WinForm app a little while back, and I was like, man, why do these variables keep holding on to this state? I want it to go away when it clicks the button. So it's just a different frame of mind. And of course, you can use them both. Routing, one of the nice things with routing is that you can actually partition an application, for example, using routing, and actually have part of your site be web forms. For example, you might have an admin section use dynamic data, and provide a really quick way of like getting your data into your app while you build the front end in MVC. So it's not always an either or choice. It's not always black or white. So in summary, MVC is not a replacement for web forms. It's really about providing alternatives. It's extensible. It's as simple or complex as you need it to be to suit your task at hand. And it's fundamental. So by now, hopefully, people believe us when we say it's not going away, because there was even wondering about MVC. It's part of the system.web namespace. We consider it, even though it's not shipped with the framework, we consider it to be part of the framework in a logical sense. And it's still ASP.NET under the hood. So for great resources, there's this ASP.NET/MVC site. This is your the perfect landing point if you want to learn more about MVC. My colleague Stephen Walther runs that site and puts up a lot of video tutorials and written tutorials. When we published the MVC RTM, he published a bunch of tutorials up there. So a really great place to learn more. If you're really into the cutting edge and you want to get the latest, greatest bits and see what we're doing as we progress, you can go to CodePlex where you can get the source code, you can get the futures, and you can also submit issues there. So now it's time for my shameless book plug. I have these mood cards that Hanselman gave me, and he demanded that I hand these out or he would beat me. So if you guys want these cards afterwards, you can come up. And the first chapter of our book is free. So the first chapter was primarily written by Scott Guthrie, who is, I don't need to tell you who he is, but and it's an end-to-end walkthrough of building a nerddinner.com, an application that was Hanselman's brainchild, very big baby. And it just is a very streamlined walkthrough of building an application. You can go download that as a PDF right now and read through that and essentially ignore the rest of the book, or you can pre-order our book on Amazon and the rest of it dives deeper and deeper into all these concepts. Or get the extended forehead edition. So this image was made by John Galloway, who I owe many favors for that. And finally, before I forget, there's evaluations on your seat. It's only two questions, so please take the time to put awesome and awesome, and then give it to the gentleman in the back with the bag over there on your way out. If you have any questions, please line up at one of the microphones, and I'll take Q&A for the remaining 8 minutes. Thanks. Hello.
Hello. We're excited about MVC. Very cool. First, I guess one small thing that caught my attention. Not sure how this works. It's that is AJAX request method. What exactly is that looking at?
Okay. So the good question. I'm glad you asked because I should have mentioned it. So is the AJAX request method is actually looking at two things. First, it looks for the HTTP header. There's a standard header that AJAX Dojo prototype sends with their request, and I forget the exact name, X HTTP requested with, and then we're looking for that value. We also check it in the form value. One of the problems with using an custom HTTP header is that even though they're not supposed to, some firewalls and routers will actually strip it out, any headers that they don't recognize. So this was a painful lesson that the ASP.NET team learned with the, I believe, ALM was the update panel. Yeah, with the update panel. So author of not only of MVC, but the update panel version 1, sitting in the front, so if you have any questions on that. But is that sometimes these AJAX requests wouldn't work because these things were stripping them. But it is the standard header that those libraries all use. So we expect that any other libraries would honor that. Cool. So don't all line up at once. All right, great. So if you have any more questions, you're just shy and don't want to ask in front of everyone, you can come up for, I'm not going to be here very long tonight, but tomorrow I have my Black Belt Ninjas on Fire Tips talk. After that, I'm going to head over to Square 3 or Area 3 and hang out there for a while so you can come and ask me all your questions. Yeah?
Hey, Phil, thanks for all your hard work. loving the MVC. My question is there a new paradigm towards creating localized applications with the MVC?
Okay, so the question is there a paradigm for creating localized applications for MVC? A lot of the localization features just work out of the box. So you could use, for example, literals in your views and have the value come from a resource manager. We don't have, for example, HTML.resource method yet. That might be an idea. And one of the tips I'll show is how to use localization with validation. And that'll be one of the tips I show tomorrow. All right, well, thank you very much, everyone, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.